Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool, exploring inequalities in dementia care and aging. In this third season, I'll be talking to different experts in the field about aging well. In this episode, we'll be specifically talking about music and creativity and how staying engaged in creative activities can help aging well and also be a lot of fun. The great thing about creative activities is that we can do them in a group or on our own, which is likely to have been a bit of a lifeline during the pandemic and times of increased public health restrictions. I am joined today by Dr. Robin Dowlin and Helena Bull. Robin is a postdoctoral research associate at the Center for Cultural Value at the University of Leeds. Robin has a specialism in the ways in which engaging with arts and culture can impact on our health and well-being, and her PhD focused on understanding the benefits of music for people living with dementia. Helena is a project manager with Manchester Camerata's community team, working alongside musicians and various partners to coordinate a range of creative music making projects. So a great panel here, and welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for inviting us.
Definitely, very exciting.
So to get us started off, creativity, when we talk about that, is a really broad term. What do you associate with creativity and creative activities? Robin, maybe, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so creativity, it's this incredibly broad term. And I think the pandemic has highlighted quite how broad it is. I mean, I've had so many conversations with people about how they've engaged with culture over the pandemic and how they've been creative. And people talk about gardening, they talk about baking a cake, as well as the kind of more traditional creative arts. I mean, I was doing a lot of cross stitch during lockdown. And that's not something I necessarily would have automatically assumed as creative, because it's somebody else's pattern. I'm just doing stitches. But there's just something inherently creative about doing things and doing things together with other people. And yeah, like you said in your introduction, it can be by yourself, it can be in a group, but also it's those kind of ways in which we use creativity to solve problems, which I think we forget about sometimes. It's those ways of looking at the world a little bit differently. So it's an incredibly broad term. People find it very difficult to define, and it's questions about whether we should define it as well.
Yeah. Helena, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. It is such a broad term, isn't it? And very often, when speaking to people and you talk about doing something creative, you tend to find that people shy away from it and say, oh no, I'm not a creative person. I can't paint, I can't sing, I can't dance. But I think for me, creativity is less about the end product that you're doing or what you're trying to achieve. And it's more about like a sense of being able to express yourself. Or for me, about being able to reflect on something. I think it's just about being able to put something of yourself into whatever it is that you're doing, whether it is something that is artistic or gardening or something sort of tangible like that. I feel like it's more about putting something of yourself into something.
I like how you phrased that, Helena, and you were referring to it as well, Robin, to activities I wouldn't normally associate with being creative, gardening, baking. I mean, I've probably started gardening since the pandemic as well. And I've probably, if you now describe it like that, I've started becoming a little bit more creative and being myself, I suppose, as you were saying, Helena. So that's interesting. I suppose usually we refer to more traditional ways of being creative, like painting or dancing. But maybe that sheds a light for others that are listening now, like, oh, actually, we might be a bit creative now. So that's nice.
I had a conversation with a colleague recently about dress code. And so I'm on a podcast, no one can see me. I'm wearing a leopard print t-shirt and I have lots of different colours in my hair at the minute. And I've decided that one way for me to express my creativity is like through what I want to wear. And it's, I don't know, I sometimes find that I'm very limited to like the amount of time I can spend in my life about being creative, like work, travel, family, friends, whatever. So one thing that I like to do is like, I feel like that's my opportunity to be creative in the mornings. Like, what am I going to wear that makes me feel good for no one else, for myself? And again, that's like that sense of expression and like reflecting perhaps on my mood or being able to put yourself into whatever it is that you're doing.
Definitely. And it sounds like we can all be creative, so in different ways. So many of the activities can also be done in a group setting, but they can also be done on your own. So we were just saying about dressing. Yeah, we get up in the morning and we can look what we want to express ourselves in. Have you noticed any benefits from either? So either being creative in a group or being creative on your own, either in your research or your work experiences. Robin, maybe?
Yes, I think it's really interesting in the world of kind of aging and creativity, because the majority of the research that's out there is around group-based activities. That seems to be largely how creativity is kind of formulated within research. It's, we get people together for 10 weeks, they do a creative activity, and then we measure before and after to understand what differences there are. And so there are kind of far fewer examples of kind of individual creative pursuits for older people in the literature. And that's one of the kind of criticisms that's coming out of this research area at the moment, is how do we begin to understand the role of everyday creativity in the lives of older people and people living with dementia, especially as kind of, especially in the case of dementia, a lot of people living with dementia's lives are governed by clock time. So it's kind of, they're expected to do a certain thing at a certain time. So a lot of creative activities are on a Wednesday at 11, and that's an hour of activity that is, that happens in the week, and then there's nothing apparently for the rest of the week. But actually, it's considering how those kind of little moments of creativity that happen within people's everyday lives can kind of build into one sense of identity, feelings of connectedness. But obviously that kind of creativity is a lot more difficult to measure and understand, because it happens in fleeting moments. It's often you have to be there or it's not captured. So that's something that I'm interested in, is how do we understand everyday creativity in the lives of older people?
Has there been anything done on that so far in the research landscape, Robin?
So less so. I mean, there's a couple of research studies which kind of explore how people really enjoy this sense of skill mastery. So getting better at something, feeling as if they've got a sort of sense of meaning and fulfillment through doing creative activities. But there's really not a lot out there other than the kind of creativity that is kind of assumed creative geniuses, I guess. It's kind of a framing of, someone was a musical maestro before they got dementia, and look, they still have this ability now, rather than actually the kind of more everyday, everyone creative experiences that people have. I mean, there's some beautiful work out there of like case studies of individual creative pursuits, but it's not been really explored too much to date.
Okay. Helena, what about your work experience doing things in a group or individually?
Yeah, as a group, it's funny what you said there, Robin, about creativity. It happens at Wednesday at 11. It's that sort of idea of organised fun, isn't it? Like, we've got to make time to be creative. I think the one thing I've sort of been lucky enough to experience with some of our groups, whether it's our Music at Mind programme, which is for people living with dementia, some of our intergenerational work, working with people in sort of residential care and in schools, or older people in the community, is that it gives people an opportunity to experience something new. So for some people who are either coming back to something creative or back to something musical, as a group, you're able to experience that together. And yeah, perhaps I'm making assumptions, but perhaps for a lot of older people, that is something that doesn't happen very regularly, is to be able to experience something new and fresh again. So I think that's a really important thing for me to sort of remember, is that this might be new for people, and this is a really fresh experience, an exciting opportunity to bring people together and to do it at the same time as well.
Yeah, and I suppose as we're talking about groups and doing things individually, and specifically looking at older people or maybe people that are aging, doing things in that social environment, I know you were saying like it's scheduled fun time, but maybe there's an element of it that for people that are a bit lonelier or socially isolated, particularly we know that many older adults are, that in the UK, that might be a little bit of an additional bonus as well, doing things in a group.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing a review at the Centre for Cultural Value with the Connecting Through Culture as We Age project, which is at the University of Bristol, which is all about older people's cultural participation and how that impacts on well-being and feelings of social connectedness. And what we can say with pretty much certainty is that engaging in a group-based arts activity is beneficial for people's well-being and sense of connection to other people. But I think it's really interesting when you kind of break down what social connection means to different people. So for example, in the literature that we've been looking at, people, and it comes back to this idea of dress and choosing what to wear, people dress up for the occasion of taking part in arts and culture. And they want to be, especially in the kind of dance related studies, they want to be chosen as a partner for the dances. And if they're not chosen, then that creates, in some cases, some feelings of, oh, I'm not good enough. I haven't been chosen, which is really interesting, because I think in the world of arts and creativity, dementia and aging, there's this kind of positivity lens that's put over everything. And yes, a lot of the literature points to experiences being overwhelmingly positive for people. But we have to remember that arts and creativity aren't just there to create positive experiences. People use art as a form of protest. They share really deep traumatic experiences through what they create. So we have to remember that it's this kind of, it's not a sort of art done on people, but it's with people, and making sure that we're kind of building in the same ethical processes and reflective processes that we would for any other kind of intervention, say.
I suppose picks up on what Helena was referring to first as well, in terms of be able to express yourself. So if you do are in a down mood or something, and maybe you just want to wear black or something, or you want to paint some more sad pictures or whatever feels right for you in that moment.
We talk about that a lot in our Music in Mind programme, about how people participate and how they interact within a music making session. So for perhaps someone on the outside of the group to see someone who is sort of negatively participating, or sort of might sort of voice that they don't want to be part of it, I think we would say as like our musicians and music therapist team, that they're showing some involvement and some interaction, that's the way in which they want to express themselves. They don't want to be part of this. So that's, you know, that's equally as valid as saying, I'm having a really good time. So there's such a scale of participation and how people want to express themselves through creativity.
Definitely, it's important to highlight that positive and negative side of it. And talking about, you've just referred a lot about Manchester Camerata, but Helena, why don't you explain to the audience a little bit about Manchester Camerata, what they do and how people might get involved as well?
Gladly. So Manchester Camerata are a chamber orchestra. I work with the community team, which has sort of two main programmes of work, where we work with younger people in schools and older people in the community. I've sort of mentioned a couple of times about our Music in Mind programme, and that's what I mainly work on. It's our creative music making programme for people living with dementia and their carers. And it's delivered by a registered music therapist and a musician from our orchestra. And we work with sort of groups of 10 people with dementia and their carers over a number of weeks, sort of up to 20 weeks, to explore music and music making, and mainly communicating through music. So where language might be beyond some of the people who take part in our program, music becomes that language for us. And it's a way to put everyone on a level, sort of level playing field, that we have the same tools to express whatever it is we're feeling or want to share with the group. And, you know, it's just an opportunity for people to explore their own creativity, either to re-engage with something that they've done before or to experience something new for the first time.
How long has it been running then?
Music in Mind, yeah, we started Music in Mind in 2012. So we're coming up to our 10th anniversary, which is yowzers. It's really exciting. The program started as a solely live program where we were delivering music making sessions in care settings and in community centres, but we've since sort of transitioned to embed training for care staff and healthcare professionals into the work that we're doing, for other professional musicians, and also to deliver sessions online where, you know, pandemic, I'm sure we'll come onto this later on as well, but weren't able to work with our regular groups live. We were able to offer them some support and consistency in their sort of creative activities through online sessions as well.
That was one of my follow-up questions as well, about, because it is a group setting and we've just lived through so many months, or well, more than that, of public health restrictions. How has the pandemic affected the ability for the Camerata meetings to take place?
I'm sure it would be a similar situation for a lot of other creative organisations, but yeah, we obviously weren't able to visit anyone in person or to connect with them like in any other really public spaces. But I think all of us felt a sort of duty of care to continue to be in touch with the care homes that we had a working relationship with, and to offer any support that we could or that we felt was appropriate. So yeah, we developed a number of online training resources and different music making resources to support carers to continue to deliver their own musical activities with their residents. And we put a big emphasis on it, that it didn't need to be the organized Wednesday at 11 a.m. we're going to do 15 minutes of music making and this is what we're going to do. We encouraged them to make it more reactive to however people were feeling that day or whatever was going on in the home, knowing that there were so many other pressures on their time, and it was sort of one of those situations where it was like everyone just has to muck in, sort of thing. So we encourage people just to deliver activities sort of more ad hoc, and that it could be adapted to it just being with one person, and it could be a 5 minute activity, it could be 10 minutes doing something else with two people or something like that. So yeah, I think it was really useful for us to challenge the way in which we offer training to other people to deliver music making, and the ways in which we sort of set up our program of work as well. But also I think that the main thing that came out of it was the sense of community it built between our carers, like offering them an opportunity to have like dedicated time for them to learn something new and to connect with people in similar situations, but also recognition that what they were doing was really important, especially at a time when people were in isolation in care homes, where people were in their own rooms, not even able to interact with other residents. It's like something, it felt really that they had a really powerful role to play in being able to connect with people and to bring people back together. So
absolutely important from the work we've done in care homes as well, and how safe visitation was enabled, or rather not enabled. We noticed as well the detrimental impacts on the residents, and so many had much poorer mental health because they weren't able to see their loved ones and just restricted. But I suppose also what you were saying, Helena, and how the Camerata has adapted, it gives that maybe ideas for people after taking part in these usually 20-week or something sessions of, oh, yes, this is how I can just integrate it in my day-to-day life. Maybe just 15 minutes there or something like that.
Definitely. Again, it's that idea that creativity doesn't need to be planned. It doesn't need to have its specific little slot on the timetable. You can be creative throughout your daily life. And you can even adapt those creative activities. Sounds really formal saying it like that. You can adapt that moment of creativity to actually help with daily life as well. And like its place in routine and assisting with other sort of more mundane activities sort of thing. But
yeah, so we're talking obviously about music now as a form of creative activity. And Robin, you've done quite a bit of research on your PhD focused on music and dementia. And particularly you've looked at in the moment music. So what is in the moment? Define that for us.
Yeah, so it's always funny because it's what I always start off any teaching sessions about in the moment experience. I always ask, what does being in the moment mean to you? And for me, the thing that always springs to mind is, well, I've missed it, but tonight I'm going to go see my first piece of live music in like 2 years. And for me, it's that moment of, well, the example I always give is standing in a crowd pre-COVID, Florence and the Machines, the example I always give, and just that sense of being completely and utterly absorbed in the present. And I think there are not many instances where dementia in particular is framed around being in the present moment, because there's a lot of people who will ask, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember this? Which can be potentially distressing for a person living with dementia who's not able to bring those memories to mind. So this kind of idea of using an in-the-moment framing came off, well, it's a collaboration between myself and Manchester Camerata and supervisors at University of Manchester and Lancaster University, where actually Nick Poncillo, who was at Camerata at the time, went to an NHS Research and Development Day, because in Camerata's evaluations of Music in Mind, they were finding that the funders were asking for outcomes that they couldn't basically prove that there was any impact. So funders were asking them to report on levels of antipsychotic medication that were being taken, falls, and sort of clinical scales relating to depression, anxiety, agitation. And this just completely contrasted with the work that they were doing on the ground with people living with dementia, where they saw these intense moments of connection between people with dementia and their family members, the kind of ability for people living with dementia to express themselves creatively. And this is all kind of tied into the idea that the role of music in particular is very kind of over-medicalized within a context of dementia. So when someone receives a diagnosis of dementia, music is more often than not labelled as therapy, whereas music therapy is a very specific thing delivered by qualified music therapists. So it using an in-the-moment framing allows you to kind of see what happens between the musical moment, so that we're not just kind of taking a measurement before music and after music and missing all of this, these amazing connections that people are making whilst they're engaging with music. And it's something that's really coming out specifically of kind of improvisation based music programs, and there are a few examples, but it's this opportunity to kind of create something new. So there's no need to remember lyrics, there's no need to necessarily tie a piece of music to a particular time in your life. It's just so kind of open to exploration and whatever it is that each person with dementia brings to the session. So yeah, it's in the moment means so many things, but within a context of dementia, I think it's a kind of real framing around the present moment and what we can do to help people be creative and not worry too much about what they can and can't remember.
I suppose that has some implications for us all, though. I mean, we're all really busy and sometimes we forget, oh, just hang on, just pause for a second and just enjoy whatever you're doing, and but also thinking about not just older or younger people living with dementia, but about people aging and older adults, how they maybe can enjoy the activities more, if it's really thinking about just be in the moment now, stop worrying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are so many people who really struggle with the lack of structure once they retire as well. I'm just thinking of my mum in particular, who's recently retired. I'm sure she's going to be filling her days with amazing amounts of creativity. But there are some people who kind of go from this working maybe perhaps a 9-to-5 job, which fills up majority of their week, to then just having vast amounts of time that they have to do what they want. And you see just so many examples of people becoming more and more creative as they age, because there is more of that time to sort of situate yourself in that present moment, and pursue those kind of things that you didn't necessarily have time for during working life. So I'm not sure how much research there is out there about that, but I think it's a really interesting area of how creativity can flourish in when we have more time.
Absolutely. And I mean, not talking about, well, I'm not sure, maybe it's exercise creative as well if we go running, but I read about a lot of older people that are suddenly starting to run in their 60s or 70s. So they have more of that time and being in that moment. Yeah. So is there anything you can relate to about the in the moment, Helena?
Yeah, I mean, everything that Roma said, I'm always amazed at how eloquently you talk about your research and your experience with Music and Mind program as well. And just think back to some really, really fun memories of some of the music making sessions we've had and the examples of people being in the moment there as well. Yeah, I think it's almost like it's like a form of mindfulness as well, isn't it? Like accepting that it's good just to, it's like pressing pause, like just appreciate what you've got right here, right now. And Robin, like you said, about taking away the pressure of having to remember something that was from whenever, or thinking ahead to, well, what's next? It's like just appreciate what we've got here and now and take in everything. Use your senses to experience what it is that you're taking part in or experiencing right now.
Yeah. So we talked about obviously music predominantly now, which is a great part of creativity, such as, but there's also arts and dancing and gardening, as we all said, lots of different ways of expressing ourselves. And have you both, I suppose, working with or researching older adults, have you found that different forms have impacted on their lives? Now, Robin, you just mentioned that there's some ongoing research where the outcome measures are completely not aligned to people living with dementia being in the moment, like falls and antipsychotic medication that doesn't seem aligned. But have you come across any research or in your work experiences of how older people are directly positively or maybe negatively impacted by it, Robin?
Yeah, so I'm actually, well, it's one of my sort of heroes in this area. I'm reading a book by Anne Basting at the moment, her new book called Creative Care, which is literally sat on my desk. It's just sat here and I just go into every once in a while. I think there are so many ways in which we can approach understanding the impacts of creativity and arts on older people and people living with dementia as well. But I think one of the most important things to consider is that creative endeavours are so uniquely individual, even if they are held within a group context. So I think there's real power in kind of storytelling and kind of case study individual work within this area, because everyone's experiences are going to be so, so different. And obviously that kind of stuff can complement your kind of larger scale understandings and using more standardized measures to get that kind of bigger picture stuff. So I think it's a case that in order to capture the individual benefits, we really need to think about think differently about the way in which we use research methods to capture these experiences, because they are so often fleeting and you miss them if you look away. So my own research, I used video observation So I sat myself within the music in my own sessions. I took part in the music whilst video recording it. So you've got kind of several layers of interpretation. I've got my own experiences of taking part in the music making. I've got the experiences that I can see, and then I can go back and review the video and look at those kind of moment by moment experiences and capture things that maybe I would have missed in my own moment. And I also use this technique to act as a kind of elicitation method. So I went into the homes of people with dementia with the video, and we would kind of sing some of the songs from the sessions, and taking note of not just what people living with dementia said during these elicitation interviews, but also how their kind of bodies remembered the session. So the movements they made, like there was so much about kind of the ways in which people's bodies synchronized with each other, which I think is so unique to music in particular. People kind of became like a metronome, moving at the same time as other people, and how that maybe felt and enabled people to feel that deeper sense of connection, knowing that everyone was going through the same thing in the same tempo. So I think there are some wonderful people doing some amazing work in this area, but I do think that there's a need for methodological innovation to kind of really capture what it means to be creative as we age.
So I suppose we need to think creatively about the methods of how we capture creativity and its impact, isn't it?
Absolutely. I am a complete advocate for creative research methods. They do sometimes go, I think they're not seen as necessarily rigorous a lot of the time, but there is a growing movement to really prove the value and worth of creative research methods for these particular experiences in particular, especially when people can't necessarily articulate verbally their experiences. So I'm all for creative research methods.
I would say that, like, seeing is believing in it as well. Like, you can read about the impact of something, and for a lot of that can be really powerful and actually really, you know, resonate with you. But actually experiencing it for yourself and being part of it answers a lot of questions. Like, I wish we could, like, as part of our evaluation or reporting for a lot of funders, I wish we could just say to them, come along and take part in a session for yourself. Witness to see what it's like to be part of that group and feel that sense of connectedness and togetherness as well. I think that would help to help people to understand exactly what it feels like.
Absolutely. So have you noticed any, I mean, you were saying, yes, attending is better and seeing is better than seeing those outcomes and reports. Have you noticed any direct impacts on people's lives that have taken part in the Camerata, Helena?
Yeah, again, echoing sort of what Robin's been saying about the people who've been involved in our Music in Mind programmes in the past, and especially within Robin's research, I guess the one thing that I'm always amazed at, specifically to sort of creativity, is how being part of Music in Mind sort of, Robin, I'm going to use the famous phrase, ripples into everyday life. So it's... it encourages people to perhaps explore their creativity and to perhaps give it more of a focus in their life as well, that it opens doors and perhaps just, you know, it gives people ideas of what to do instead of doing the everyday things that they might do. It's like, well, actually today I'm going to try something a bit different, and I'm going to go to an art gallery, I'm going to buy a radio, and I'm going to listen to some new music, or I'm going to speak to someone about a film and we're going to go and watch a film together, something like that. So the impact that it can have in their everyday life.
Speaking about that, about different activities as well, about how we can be a bit more creative in our everyday life, what would you both suggest to our listeners who would like to get creatively involved, either in groups or individually in their day-to-day life? Where would they start, Robin?
Well, I think it's first taking a look inwards to what really interests you as a person. What have you always wanted to do but never been happy enough to take that first step? I mean, we all have creative experiences dating back to when we're children growing up. What did you love to do when you were younger? And then I think what's really fantastic about Manchester Camerata and other cultural organisations is that they are so embedded within the communities that they work in. And it's really about finding out what's kind of going on. I mean, give Helena a ring. She'll tell you everything that's going on in Manchester when it comes to this sort of thing. She's just a font of knowledge. And it's just finding ways to kind of make those connections with people who have similar interests, or even, I mean, the things like the National Theatre, they've got YouTube videos of productions that can just be watched from the comfort of your own home. And I think some of these things take away some of the kind of the more traditionally viewed as barriers. So, for example, when I've talked to people about arts programmes for older people, they say that the number one barrier to getting to a cultural venue is transport. And so it's kind of, yeah, how do we get people into these spaces? Are you able to get to this space? If not, how do we get what's on offer to you within the comfort of your own home? And obviously there are challenges when it comes to that as well. So in terms of getting creative, I think it's looking inward. What are you interested in? And then, yeah, projecting that out into the world and hoping you've got a Helena in every city.
Yeah, I think you pick up on an important point there as well, though, about the barriers to certain activities. As you both mentioned, you can be creative in many aspects of our lives throughout the day, but some people might struggle with the transport. Some people might not have the funds to go into a museum, to pay for going into an art gallery if that's what they like, or listening to live music, things like that. So it's also being aware of that and how hopefully that can be tackled, maybe via social prescribing sometimes or other ways of incentives. But Helena, what would you suggest to our listeners of how they can get creative?
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Robin said. I mean, being creative doesn't mean spending money for me. I think there's so much that you can do without having to pay for a ticket to do something or to pay money to travel somewhere. There's so much you can do. I don't know. I think the one thing for me I would say is to be brave. I think creativity can often seem like it's sort of out of, for some things it might feel like it's out of your reach. You know, I don't have any experience in painting, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. Like, just to be brave and to try it. Again, if you view being creative as just a form of expression, then perhaps makes it easier to sort of to try something new or to encourage people to be creative. I definitely see it as a cultural sort of organization. I think it's our responsibility to be able to offer enough activities or experiences to people who may otherwise face those barriers or have challenges in attending or, you know, being part of something creative. And a lot of it is around actually just getting information to people. You know, you can try all social media channels, posters, flyers, whatever, but you still will be able to reach everyone through that. And I think social prescribing is one of those ways in which we can actually start to get the word out. You know, people access healthcare, so being able to speak to link workers or your GP or something like that to be able to offer advice and information on creative activities where you live, I think is incredible. And there's some really, really amazing organizations part of social prescribing and that sort of activities that I think, like, well, as Cameron's as well, I feel like we're very lucky to be able to connect to people who we might not have been able to reach through those sorts of channels.
Absolutely. So I hope this has given our listeners quite a bit of ideas and thoughts for how they can get creatively involved and what is creativity and how can it impact on aging well. And for all of us, I suppose, it doesn't just have to be in later life. So I think that's all we've got time for today, Robin and Helena. Thank you both so much for joining. It's been really great talking to you. And if you want to learn more about Robin's research or the Manchester Camerata, do have a look at the bio with more details. And for more discussion into aging well, have a listen to my next few podcasts. Goodbye and thank you both.